Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy, Joe Stapleton. He's my work wife, James Hardigan.
Happy World Theatre Day, Joe, which I feel is very appropriate because you put in quite the performance.
Yes, I'm here for my curtain call. Coming up on today's show, can it possibly be another victory lap? Now, I'm a little more muted than I usually am because we are in the room, live in the room at the Irish Open.
It is. It is Wednesday. It is day 1A. So the poker room is kind of 50% full. You got the main event, plus you got a few side events as well. We're on a balcony overlooking that poker room. So you might hear your background noise, the PA system going off, chip shuffling. But what we don't want is to stop the concentration of the people at the tables.
Yeah, so usually I'm like screaming in my house at 6 o'clock in the morning doing this, and now I just don't want to bug people. So not exactly a victory lap today, but a fourth place finish lap. That's right.
It's as good as a victory, Joseph. Don't sell yourself short.
It really is. More on that later. I did have a deep run in my first ever event as a poker player wearing the red spade. So we'll be chatting a bit about that, as well as the Hendon Mob Championship James and I both got to play.
Yep.
There was also a staff tournament last night we got to play. Three whole poker tournaments to talk about. But we'll be having a guest today, a member of the team who we haven't had on in a long time.
We haven't. Now, Felix and his team of German streamers spent hours covering the Six Max event that you made that deep run in. So in order to provide objective analysis alongside your subjective celebration, Felix is going to join us when we recap that tournament.
Fantastic. Wait, I'm going to get criticized now. Okay, anyway, we'll also be speaking to one of the brains behind this entire operation here at the Irish Open. The owner,
the event owner, Paul O'Reilly, is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the history of the Irish Open, when Paul took it over, and what he has changed about it, and what he thinks makes this genuinely historic event so unique.
And finally, at long last, the crossover no one asked for. We'll be joined by players, commentators, and award-winning podcasters David Lappin and Dara O'Carney.
Indeed. Who, spoiler alert, are going to be joining us on the live stream from Dublin. So as part of our Irish Open live stream preview, we'll talk about the main event coverage that's coming your way over the Easter weekend.
Fantastic. No super fan this week as we're trying to do this all live, local, in person. But as long as we're talking about live, let's talk some live poker.
And we are going to welcome our first guest from Team Pro. It is the legend they call X-Flix. Felix Schneiders, welcome back to Poker in the Ears.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Have you not seen enough of me?
No. We can't see enough of you, Joe.
Yet this week. I do want to get one thing out of the way really quick. Can I please have the names of all your teammates? Like this guy, I feel like I've spent more time with him than I've spent with my girlfriend in the last week. And I don't know this fella's name. And I was too embarrassed to ask while he was...
Heiko. This is Heiko.
Heiko. Hi, yes. Heiko.
We got Heiko. He's, for the first time, he's with us, actually. So we're rotating with the
team.
Okay,
so I didn't need... I shouldn't feel so bad for not knowing his name already.
Yeah.
Okay. Heiko,
it's
what's
okay.
up?
Heiko is new with us.
And who else?
That's on the technical side, we've got Kojak, Mario, and he's doing all the technical stuff for our stream, and we couldn't do it without him. And then there's Ollie. You know Ollie already?
Of course,
your co-commentator, yes.
And that's the team for Dublin. And we're rotating stopwise
now
with a lot of different people.
I don't want to take things out of order, but just to explain why Felix is joining us. So you do these, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, these rudimentary Twitch streams, right, where you're covering like smaller events at a PokerStars live event. And you had your guys covering the €350 Six Max event, which you played, I played.
Exactly.
Neither of us made a particularly deep run, but Joe, we've already announced, did. And you took arguably a questionable decision when Joe had about six big blinds on the bubble that, hey guys, let's keep the stream going. We'll follow Joe, and then as soon as Joe goes broke, we're done. We get to go home.
Yep.
And this was, what, like 8:30 in the evening?
Yep.
Fast forward 8 hours, and it's still going on.
Yep. We didn't expect it either. Actually, I'm just going to be brutally honest with you guys. We just thought this would be a nice ending of the stream.
Yep.
One more hour covered Joe, how he busts, like hopefully making the money and min-cashing. And then we'll get to go home. But we, you know, the,
I do
the
have
universe
to give some credit to them for this, because you can never underestimate my desire for attention and my desire to be on camera and my desire to have the spotlight. You guys couldn't see my hold cards, right?
No, we couldn't.
You would not believe the fucking hands I folded during this thing. Aces, kings. I was like, I don't care. I'm laddering up. No one is going to turn these cameras off on me.
Well, let's just provide a bit of the context then, because we're skipping ahead several hours. I was in my seat at 1:35 for a tournament that started at 2 p.m. So I was there for the shuffle up and deal. I was there for the first hand. You came in quite late.
Yeah.
And so we had like different journeys up until we got to the dinner break. And the weird thing is, on the dinner break, you and I had very similar stacks, both well above average. And coming back from dinner, this is where the Freaky Friday shit continues.
Yeah, that's it, Freaky Friday.
We deviated paths. You heartagoned it. You knitted it up. And I got all kind of like loosey-goosey and was like, hey, I'm going to play lots of hands. Cut to, I lose half my stack in half an orbit. I'm out one orbit later. And Joe is like, I'm going to scrape into the money. I'm going to fold my way into the money.
So let me roll it back a little bit, even though this story has been fairly well documented at this point. I don't know if everyone listening to the podcast knows. I was on vacation in Amsterdam. The very last night in Amsterdam, my girlfriend and a couple of our friends, they're flying back to L.A. the next day. And I tell them, look, kids, there's bad news. Your flight's at 8:30 in the morning, which means your car's picking you up at 5:30. And they were like, guess what? We're not going to bed. So I didn't go to bed my last night in Amsterdam.
Wow.
I stayed up with them, put them in a car about 5:30, and then I had to leave about 10:30, and I was afraid if I went to sleep, I was going to miss my flight. I was going to do whatever. My phone does weird things sometimes, especially if I fall asleep while it's on. The alarm doesn't really go off. So I just stayed awake through. So I get here pretty late. I think I register, 4 o'clock? 3:30, 4 o'clock, on no sleep. And I figure, hey, it's a 350. My job is to be an ambassador. I'll go be an ambassador. I'll show everyone a good time. I'll put it in a performance. I will go and have beers. I'll buy beers for the table, yada, yada, yada. I'll be in bed by 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Then what happens is, cut to the part of the story that James is telling us about.
Yes.
And so I had a decent stack at the break or whatever. And then what happened was, I started to play kind of dumb and lost a few pots. I think I called an all-in with, like, bottom pair. I sort of backed myself into having to call it off against a short stack. And then what happened
HTC,
was...
HTC, Joe. HTC.
What is HTC again?
Have to call.
Have to... Yes, exactly. I HTC'd it.
I've heard that one
and
before.
And then what happened was... James,
HTC syndrome.
HTC.
It's a common thing in poker, right?
Well, I'm going to use that for the stream, actually, now that I know it. So it's a good strategy.
James comes over to, like, check in with me, and I jokingly disparage myself. And he goes, how's it going? I go, I played real bad against this young lady over here. And this fucking prick next to me goes, yeah, he did. And that really lit a fire under me. Like, I was so pissed off
at
that comment.
So this gave you the motivation. To then, I am going to make the final table.
I will do so much out of spite. My entire life is based on spite. You have no idea how motivating spite is. So now I'm pissed, and I'm like, I'm not going to make another mistake for the rest of this tournament. So, cut to, we're like 5 from the money. And I have 10 from the money. And I have 15 big blinds. And I don't think I have enough to make it to the money on 15 big blinds. So I have ace 10 under the gun, and I shove, and a guy tanks for a while, and when he tanks, I'm like, man, he probably has ace jack. I really hope he folds. This feels like an ace jack tank. He's like thinking, and eventually calls with ace queen, and I, a little snarkily, oh, wait, that's him. That's literally him. That's literally the guy.
You summoned him. You summoned
him
up here.
How the fuck did that happen?
That was the universe.
So then I kind of like, I was like, oh, well, thanks for making me think you would fold, even though I kind of thought it was like a tiny bit of a slow roll. And then what happened was, before the words were even out of my mouth, there's a 10 on the flop. Now I feel terrible.
Domination rotation.
Yes. There's a 10 on the flop. The 10 holds. And I double up and I make a pact with myself, the devil, whoever else. I am not going to play another hand until we get to the money.
Okay. But this seems to be a strategy, because I was watching you for a long time, right up to the point where you played down to the final two tables. You were not playing many hands. And this is where I turn my attention to Felix, is you've taken this editorial decision
yep.
to watch Joe Stapleton, to focus on his table, but he's not doing anything. He's just folding.
Well, he's shoving all in all the time. I was feeling like he's picking up so much dead money. I was amazed. I was like, he can't always have premium hands the way he shoved all the time. I was like, oh, he must be picking up some light pots with ace-five suited or like king-jack off or whatever. And like afterwards, when we went home, you told me you basically had it every single time.
Yes.
It's like, crazy.
So yeah, I wasn't playing, to be perfectly honest, I wasn't playing particularly tight. I just had 9-3, 8-3. I mean, maybe I did fold in a couple of spots where I think probably I shouldn't have, where I would fold like an ace-8 from middle position, or like I never fold any suited aces, but like, or it'd be like ace-9 from under the gun, stuff like that. I just always feel terrible going broke with those hands. And I'm an emotional player. I'm going to tell you guys right now, I don't care what's right. I care about how I feel. Because shoving with like ace deuce suited under the gun, like I just don't feel good about that. I don't care if it's the right player or not.
But shoving over an open race or an open race and some calls and just picking up the dead money?
So I did that once or twice. James saw one hand where it went like raise call and I shoved like the last hand before a late break and I had 2 sixes there.
Perfect.
And I was really just trying to pick up the dead money. Like I could have done it with any 2 cards. I wasn't really doing it on the value of 2 sixes. So then what started happening is I started saying, hey, every time we ladder up, I'll buy a round of drinks for the table.
I love that.
And I didn't realize how many ladders there were because it ended up being like 7 or 8 times, and it really did help pass the time.
But yep. I did point out to you that this promise you were making, and at the start, of course, when we're talking about a min cash and then a min plus cash, the ladders are not that great. So the point is, any extra money you're winning by laddering, you're losing by buying drinks for all the remaining players.
But yes. You're gaining in future EV for the performance.
Yes.
I think actually that's what happened.
Oh, there's another guy that went deep with me. Rec Jim finished in 5th or 6th place or whatever. Before I know it, I mean, there was only one hand that I can really remember even playing was the aces hand that I whispered into the microphone later. I think I lost a little bit
of
value.
That was pretty early on, but I think you didn't even cost yourself that much, to be honest. I mean, he probably had a hand that either was going to call or fold anyways on turn or river, so whatever happened.
So while this laddering is going on, at what point are you and Ollie ruining your decision? At what point, at what time are you like, why did we decide we were going to follow this bozo? He was meant to be broke hours ago.
Yeah, basically like 2 hours in because we were super tired. So this is what happened from my perspective, like to go back on this topic. You were picking up so many like dead money spots.
Yeah.
I was amazed.
So yes, to return to that, it was always ace king, ace queen, aces, kings.
But you didn't have to even sweat it. You didn't have to play any flops. You didn't have to sweat any all-ins. I think it was the perfect strategy
to adapt for
your style of playing. And you basically made this game your own. I think that worked out
that like nothing disastrous happened to me. There are plenty of people that like shoved aces and got called by King Jack or something. And then King Jack got there and they were out. That just never happened to me.
No sweat.
And kind of before I knew it, we're at the final table. Like, it's...
Well, I mean, as I said, I was with you until you made the final 2 tables. And at that point, obviously, your guys are like now struggling to get shots because the crowd is getting a little bit bigger. And the staff, and I understand why they do this, decided to clear the tournament area of just kind of onlookers and spectators.
Yeah.
And I just said to you, I said, look, I'm not going to watch you from like 7 tables away. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to bed, and you can tell me what happened in the morning. So it was kind of like 50-50. It was a coin flip. I was half guilty that I wasn't staying to support, but also I'm kind of like, I'm knackered. And it was a good decision.
Once I got told off, I would have gone too. And also, the pressure of having these guys watching me isn't normal pressure that normal people would be thinking. Just like I didn't want to be boring, right? Every time I like wanted to talk to the camera, I wanted to do something for them, I felt terrible.
But that's putting on a show for the camera is different, right? Because that in a way you can be entertaining without feeling the need to play hands. In a way, you can distract yourself from the boredom of folding by
some of that, exactly. But having you personally standing there, I just felt bad. Like I wasn't
reason to feel bad. It's my decision. I'm not chained to your seat.
No, I know. So when you got sent to bed, I was like, okay, perfect. It's a little bit of pressure off that I'm not trying. I just don't feel bad that my friends are standing there on their feet. Then what happened was, and I know that I've already decided I'm doing this strategy. Now I'm looking and I'm seeing what the pay jumps are every single spot, and I'm like, now I'm really going to play no hands.
Absolutely.
I think I can actually, like, what was the average stack? 20 big blinds?
Yeah, wasn't that deep.
Right, so. And I had between 8 to 12 big blinds the entire time. I'm like, all I have to do is, like, outlast a couple of, like, cooler hands from people,
that's,
and I'll just make more money, make more money. And I do have a little bit of regret. I was saving this part of the story. About my bust out hand, which I think everyone obviously replays their bust out hand in their head, and they go, oh, maybe I should have done. That's when I decided I was going to veer from the strategy. I got very lucky. One of the guys is there, so I don't want to be too quiet. I do think a couple people, I see I'm punted a little bit.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, we probably have to run the numbers on this, but this is easy to calculate. You just plug it into a calculator, and then you come up with
the
number.
Okay, so it wasn't egregious, though. It wasn't bad.
Wasn't.
Okay.
I mean, there's four people left, and you shove in the cutoff. So basically, what needs to happen is three people don't need to have a hand.
No, not me. I mean the other folks, like the two people who went right before me.
Right, but you shoved, right? Yeah. The last hand.
The last hand I did shove. But anyway, so I basically, my mentality changed once I got into saw that I was now guaranteed 7,900 euros. I'm like, guess what? It was like a 30 big blind stack, a 40 big blind stack, a 50 big blind stack, and me with 8 big blinds. And I'm like, and I'm under the gun. The blinds are going up in the next hand also. So I have 8 bigs.
I love the fact that you're sitting there asking Felix, was it a good shove? All Felix is thinking is, yeah, I wish you'd done it 4 fucking hours ago. So I could have got more sleep.
Yeah.
I was going to actually ask you, like, all the table talk you did, asking people for names and, like, talking with everybody.
Yeah.
Would you have done that when we weren't there?
Yes.
For sure. Yes, is that just your style?
That's my thing. I think
I love it.
What do I bring to the table, right, as a PokerStars ambassador? It's to meet people, have a good time. It is exhausting. It is actually 6 Max was perfect for it because it's a little bit
more action,
easy to do, but also to get the 6 names. But
yeah.
But yes, no, that's something that I always do, and I kind of want. I want people. Look, not everyone gives a fuck who I am, but for the ones that do, I want them to have an experience, and I want them
to
have had a good experience with me. So now we're at four-handed. I have 8 big blinds. The blinds are going up in the next hands, which is going to leave me with like 6 big blinds, and I'll be in the big blinds, so I'll have like 4 big blinds after that. And I figured now's the time for my range to get pretty much as wide as it's going to be. I wake up with queen 7 suited under the gun and figure there's maybe even a shot for 8 big blinds. It gets through.
Yep.
It does not get through. I get called by king jack and 7 on the flop, also a jack on the flop.
Yeah.
And I do not catch up after that point. So I do have some regrets about that. And of course, once I go broke there, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have just blinded down to 4 big blinds, to 2 big blinds, because I could have still finished in 4th place. But I did kind of want to give myself a shot at that point, not even to win, but to be a part of the deal. Because I figure if I can double up even one time, then maybe, because I've been trying to broker a deal from about 12-handed. From about 12-handed, I was like,
let's get a deal.
Nobody wants to do a deal. Sure you want to do it? You sure you want to do a deal? And then you know what happened? I went broke, and guess what happened immediately after?
They did a deal.
They did a deal.
Always.
Which is fine. One guy tried to like needle me online. By the way, people have been overwhelmingly supportive of me.
I was going to say, I've been really impressed with how supportive everyone's been, how delighted everyone is for you. I've said on a couple of times, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you had a big score in an event in the U.S. a couple of years
ago. See, I don't count that as a big score because it was a 5K buy-in, so it was like 2.5 times my buy-in.
Okay.
This was several hundred times my buy-in.
Sure, but in terms of actual money, is 8,000 euros your biggest cash or second biggest cash?
It's my second.
Okay, fine.
But also, I didn't have all of my action in that either, so if we're talking profit,
right?
This is my biggest profit in a non-slots gambling environment.
Of course.
So it was really big. So one guy needled me, he's like, haha, they made a deal as soon as you went out. And I was like, it didn't even, a lot of times something like that would bother me, it would like take a little wind out of my sails. It didn't bother me at all because I was like, yeah, they should have. That's exactly what they should have done. Yeah. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And then secondly, a few people, and nice enough, wrote congratulations to me, which as you know is something I've been saying for 20 years now or whatever. And I don't feel like a congratulations at all.
I think you basically made this game your own. I was saying, I think it's best that you actually got there with no sleep. I think that actually is a good primer to just be in a state where it doesn't matter to you too much.
So you're right.
You're
going
to be able to just, you know, grind it down. And then you also, you know, entertained yourself. You entertained the people. So I think you did the perfect job. You did the content for us, so we didn't have to do anything. That was perfect.
So were your people entertained?
I also felt bad,
not just for you guys, but for the audience. I was like, God damn, these people, they need to go to bed too.
So, I mean, out of 2 streams that we've done so far here at this site,
yeah,
your content has scored the most amount of viewers. So you can bet yourself.
Who needs money? Who needs money when you have fame?
Now, obviously, the following day, we had the €250 Hendon Mob Championship, the flag hunting event, as everyone calls it. I mean, it was a bit of a blink and you'll miss it appearance as far as you were concerned. You played for, like, what, 2 hours?
It was very similar to the first one, except instead of not losing every time I was in for my tournament life, I did lose every time I was all in for my tournament life. I lost three flips, yeah. And that was it. I was out.
So this is two tournaments in a row for me, the 350, which you final tabled, and this 250, where I made the top 20%. Sadly, only the top 15% gets paid.
Ooh.
But I do want to share one hand with Felix. Joe's already heard this story because it is quite unbelievable.
Go ahead.
So there was a Canadian lady at my table called Anita, and she, earlier in the tournament, she made a turn bet of 5,000, and a player moved all in for 7,200, and she folded.
She folded.
Yes. So that provides a little bit of context.
Okay.
So we are at the 1.2K blind level. She opens under the gun plus one to 6K, sizable raise.
That's huge.
Sizable raise.
I like that raise.
So I have 19K, I think, at this stage, so relatively short, and a good reshoving stack.
Yep.
It is folded to me on the button, and I move all in. And the small blind thinks a long time and tanks, and later reveals that he decided to fold ace queen.
Okay.
Big blind tanks, thinks for a while, and folds. Action comes back to her. She thinks for, I'm going to say, 15 seconds and then folds.
Well, really long time then.
And because the guy tells me I had ace queen and was thinking about calling you, I showed him that I had aces.
Okay.
She goes, I made a good fold. I had kings. Now, of
that
course,
sounds exactly like the
my
same.
End of the table are like, no
fucking
way,
love it,
no way you had kings, and like, and the guy next was like, no, I think she's telling the truth. I think she folded kings there, and I'm like, I just went, good fold, I guess an inspired read. I mean, her argument is, you know, with my reputation, no one's going to make that move against me unless they've got better than me.
Well,
I'm like, well,
she's very image aware.
Thank God I didn't.
That's right. She wasn't wrong, James. Felix, do you have any hands that you want to talk about while you're here? Because apparently this is a fucking strategy podcast now.
Well, to be honest, my community has been asking me to post more hands on my Instagram. I actually did that this morning, and all the feedback I got was, easy fold. It's like, oh, fuck you, man. Really. That was really like the only hand I could share. I made a big hero fold against the guy who really took a nice line, a value line with aces. He overbet the turn. I had a pair and a flush draw, and I was thinking about moving all in, and he overbet the turn, and he overbet shoved the river, and I was like, this looks so bluffy. Like, the entire chat was going, call. Kojak in the booth was going, call. And I'm like hemming and hawing, and then in the end, I found the fold, and he showed the aces to the camera, so he had aces. So
we're fucking master folders, Felix. Don't listen to him.
See?
Don't listen to him.
Did you get to play in the staff tournament last night?
No, I actually didn't. I missed that, sadly.
Because we normally get invited as guests, so Joe and I were there, Nick was there. None of us cashed at all. Joe showed up and decided he was going to buy drinks for everyone in the tournament until someone pointed out, there are 200 people from the Dublin office here.
I didn't know that. I thought it was just like the few tables. I was like, all right, drinks on me, everybody.
Oops.
And I was like, just these tables. Oh, is it those tables too? Is it those tables too? It's those. Okay, all right. Maybe just the tables that heard me say it. I had to limit things at that point. And then I was planning on doing the same thing and buying drinks more and more as we went on, but I didn't last in that thing because... Now, I'm not going to say I totally took a dive in the tournament. Now, I'm not really supposed to win that turn. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
I think
people would enjoy me going deep in that thing again. But something, Felix, which goes back to the hand you were just talking about, they always have it.
They always have it.
They
it's
always have
poker.
It. You don't have
it's
to worry poker. About it. They always have it. You're not getting bluffed. You're never getting bluffed. When they bet one big blind on the river and you have second pair, fucking fold.
Just fold.
Just fold. Yeah, just they
fold.
Have it.
Nobody ever triple barrel bluffs in live poker. Nobody. They always check the river when they
exactly.
don't have it.
So as far as Joe and I are concerned, that's our Irish Open playing experience done and dusted. We're now going to focus on the content side of things. Are you playing the main event, Felix?
Yes, I'm planning to play the main event and win it.
And as ever, obviously. You will combine playing poker with making content from poker.
Yes, that's what we do.
I'm going to make a pledge to Felix. I will continue to cover the main event for as long as you are still in it.
Nice.
I will be there no matter what. If Felix is in, the broadcast will continue.
Perfect. Okay, I'll take up your word on it. Are you going to come to our booth and do some commentary? And well, while I'm still in, or you have to.
If I can, sure, why not? Yeah, I feel it's the least I could do is to come by and say
auf
hi.
Deutsch?
Yeah, well, not in frickin' German, but
no, that's fine. We'll have more
Germans
English
are smart.
Then.
They know how to speak English. They're there for him. They're not here for
you. Already learned a little bit of German.
That's gone in one ear, out the other, pal.
Felix. Hello, meine babies.
Good luck in the main event, and hopefully we'll see you on a feature table. Hopefully we'll see you make a deep run.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much for having me. That was a lot of fun.
Well, it is day 1A of the main event. Still 3 flights to follow. A good opportunity to talk about the Irish Open, to talk about its significance, to talk about its history. Thrilled to be joined by event owner Paul O'Reilly. Paul, welcome.
Thank you.
It's nice definitely here. It's definitely O'Reilly, right? Because one of my biggest fears is that someone's name will be Riley, and I'll add the O to it, and they'll just be like, "You racist!" It's not just O always; it is O'Reilly, right?
It is. I'm an O'Reilly.
Thank goodness.
I'm an O'Reilly. Believe it or not, where I live actually, I moved into a new house about 5 years ago. My next door neighbors are O'Reillys. My next door neighbors are O'Reillys, and my next door neighbors are Rileys.
So, oh wow!
So do you have to like go through the list and like make sure you're like where your cousins along the way, or do you just sort of let that all?
Look, the only problem I have is the postman, because he's having a mare with the three houses at the moment. And he is having a mare. I'm getting bills that aren't mine.
I was going to say, do you have to have a morning conference of neighbours where you trade posts? It's like that's yours, that's mine. That's
my neighbour's son is called Paul. I can curse on this slightly, yeah?
Yes, you can.
I shit you not. I opened his mail 3 weeks ago. Summons.
Oh, boy.
I was, uh-oh, what did I do? Not me. Wife comes in. What have you done? I goes, I don't know. And she goes, well, that's not you. Anyway.
Have you considered simplifying matters by moving?
I've only gone there and
there's no guarantee he won't move into another neighborhood full of Rileys.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true. Paul, it's obviously well documented that this is a very long running tournament, the longest running No Limit Hold'em event outside of the US. This is the 40th edition of the Irish Open as a live tournament.
40th
is that right?
Live. 40th yeah. Live. Yeah. Yeah. I'm involved in this now 25 years.
Wow.
Okay. So I was involved in this with. So my father was involved in it.
Paul O'Reilly?
Paul O'Reilly, no. he was a Harry. And he was involved. He was very good friends with Liam Flood.
The gentleman.
Yeah, they were good pals. And I went on to be good friends with Liam. We got on very well. And I had a casino in Dublin called the Merion Casino.
Yep.
So we ran it there for a number of years, and it would move from the Centre Club, and then Liam took over the reins, and then we moved it to the Merion Club, and then it outgrew the Merion Club, and it kind of got outgrew there at a time when the Hendon Mob were coming over, and then they messed around like with a stream. It was this streaming was new, a new thing, and we were doing it in them, and the Merion Casino was 5 floors. It's an old Georgian building. It's an absolute fucking disaster zone for trying to get. And this is the day, you didn't have Wi-Fi or all this, you know, we're trying to run an eat and a cave. The old yellow dial-in aircom jobs when you're trying to dial it into something. But it worked. And then it just kind of outgrew itself. It was only then around about 2006, Paddy Power came on board. And so we were doing business with Paddy Power. And then Paddy Power bought the Irish Open off me and Liam.
Right.
And on the proviso, there was some small print that went into this when I was selling it. One, Liam and I would run it for 10 years.
Okay.
Two, this was one of the better ones. If they ever thought about selling it, they'd sell it back to me.
Okay.
So, funny enough, nearly 10 years on the button, I bought it back off Paddy Power. But I bought it with JP. Because I had been talking with JP, and I'd been in the Burlington for a number of years, and I was looking at what was going on with the Norwegian Open, and we were kind of running kind of concurrently right to a sort of, and we were kind of looking at it going, we should really just put this into one building and turn it into a huge thing, which it turned into. But when we were in City West, we only needed a quarter of the third of the room. If we had been in City West now, and obviously we can't be there, City West wouldn't be big enough.
Right. That's how much it's grown. That's how big the events become.
This is 1.5 times the size of City West, this building. But I remember, I actually have, and I should have brought them in really, I have one of the original sets from the Irish Open of old clay chips from the mid-80s. And I offered them. I actually offered them to Terry Rogers' son. I need them on them.
Wow.
So I have them at home.
Man, there's plenty of people that would want them.
Yeah.
I guess one of my questions would be, so when you say you've been involved for 25 years, how did you get involved? Like, what did you do? You buy your way in? You just show up one day and go, all right, I think I'm going to be involved.
No. What happened was, so Liam knew my dad. They all played poker. They all played poker out in the north side in these small clubs. And I think they just kind of, well, I have a club. You don't have a club. You have an Irish Open. You have chips. I have tables.
Okay.
Shake hands.
Absolutely.
Let's go.
It's a perfect partnership.
All right.
It's back in the days of actual shaking hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Then what happens is, give a few points, expand on the deal, give a few more points, deal might get changed the next day, shake hands again, a few more points. And this is how all these things were done in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
But they were playing like seven card stud, they were playing all these kind of cool games back then as well in these clubs. But the Liam was old school. You know, even when we were developing, back in the 90s, like we could the blinds, like there was no 3-bet and a 4-bet and these type of things. It was just double the last bet. That was it. And I used to go hammer and tongs. Now, me and Liam used to have some heated discussions over a bottle of wine or two and a meal because Liam, we have to start changing this. We need more chips. We need to look at the way the game is progressing. It's changing. Fuck the game. We're staying the way we are. This is it, Paul. I don't want to talk about it. So we kind of got there slowly. It was a kind of a slow burner where we got there, you know. But because he was, Liam's real old school, but a lovely guy. Like, if you're under, he was a gentleman. Like, he was a lovely, lovely man. Like, a real, very generous guy. Very generous man.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes. Always wanted to do the best of for the players. He loved the Burlington when we went to the Burlington. When we moved from the Merriam and we went to the Burlington. And then he seen what Paddy Power were bringing to it. Paddy Power, like, we're kind of bringing it to that next level. It just so happened that when the numbers kind of went up, they came down, I think that was just kind of a natural progression for the way things were going with high buy-ins.
Well, that's what I was
going
to ask, because when you got involved, that was at the start of the poker boom. So when you first got involved in the Irish Open, I imagine you were seeing the numbers going up every year. I know that during that time, the buy-in changed as well. It became kind of like a premium price point event and was generating quite big prize money. And then obviously you go through the area post-boom, I guess, where you kind of have to bring the buy-in down and get the numbers in a different way.
The first year when we moved to the Burlington, Paddy Power involved, we went 10-handed, because we had to go 10-handed.
Right.
We had 710 players. No, we had 708 players because the stream table could only hold 8 players. Sold out.
Wow.
Liam wouldn't do an alternate.
Then we have old to do school, remember, old school.
Yeah. Old school. We've 30, 40 people wanting to get in, more. There's a £3,000 buy-in.
Right.
The tickets, off the record, I was told, and I knew this, were going for 6,500, 7,500, 8,000 euros in the corridor.
Whoa. People were scalping tickets?
Outside.
That's insane.
I've never heard of that
before.
I've
never known of a buy-in for a poker tournament be sold at a
markup
retail.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Like, serious. Like, they were going for, like, 200% markup.
Wow.
And there was only online satellites weren't really a big thing then, you see.
Right.
Not to the level you got to. And then you had a lot. Paddy Power, at that time, then you had Blonde Poker, you had Cake, you had all of these people. And they were all kind of going, and everybody was trying to get in on this. Everybody was trying to get in there. You had, like, just sponsored pros all over the place. It was brilliant. And You get into 2000 and you're coming into 2013, 2014, 2015. And then what was happening is they couldn't decide on what was the right buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
They did a 3,000, they did a 4,000.
Look, we still argue about stuff like that today. With, you know, well-oiled Poker Stars machine. Oh, how much it's tough.
It was moving, but it was moving every year. And I go, you can't do this, guys. You can't go up. You got to stop.
You've got to find an identity, right?
Yeah.
And say, this is what this event is, and this is the place we want to be.
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of like Paddy Power. Like, like they're huge in Europe, as you know. They're a behemoth, especially in gaming and what they do. So poker is an element of their big picture. It's part of their suite of everything else that they do. So it's very good to work with now. And you got to admire the brand and what they were doing and what they do some crazy things. Like they had the highest chip stack in the world competition thing, but they built this huge thing. They just always had something mad going on.
Yeah.
You know, right. Final table in a boxing ring. They're willing to just kind of do some cool stuff. But I think in 2015 then, I just don't think, it's not that they didn't know what to do with it. They were just kind of wondering what to do with it, if you get me. And I was kind of saying, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I know what to do with it. So lucky enough, we got it.
So when we talk about the identity of the Irish Open, what does it mean to you in the sense of what makes this a unique event amongst every other kind of poker tournament at this price point around
Europe? What's
the
secret sauce?
Yes.
The thing is this, and this is a huge thing for us. 95% of people who will come here will lose money.
That's true.
Okay, they will lose money. They need to walk out the door and go, I'll be back. Mm-hmm. So that's number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And 95, that's just the fact of the matter is, you need to have left. You might have won some money, you might have lost some money, but I'll be back. Like I was having a few pints last night with some Canadians. They're coming out 7-8 years in the trot. I'm only talking to a guy downstairs, John, Toronto John, I call him. He's from Toronto. Donald was his surname. Toronto John. He sounds kind of gangster-like. He's talking to a guy, right, I'm on to my mate. He's in Vegas. He's on the plane now. He's on his way to the airport. He's gone. He's on the phone. You need to come over. He's jumped on the plane. His other mate is coming over from Busch Gardens in Florida. They're flying in tonight. So they're just coming. And they were going. I was down in this Mississippi thing. Pile of shit. I'm going over the Irish Open. I don't know what I was thinking, not going. So they just keep coming back. But they're there last night, and I'm talking to some new people. And your man's going, an American guy, Canadian guy, a couple of other people, couple of English, and they're going, this is fucking mad. Like, it's Tuesday night. Everybody's absolutely rat-arsed. There's a band on. They're robbing the microphone off. And they're telling the band singer with his guitar, karaoke. It's not a karaoke session. It is now. They're singing, dancing, the whole lot.
This is why I won't. So JP's asked me to do comedy last year and this year. And I'm like, I'm not really sure. Like, I'm just afraid of just getting ripped off the stage. Like, it's a wild crowd here. This is like Thunderdome.
It's great crack though. Like it's
yes.
You know,
yes.
That's what it's all about. And like, I have people come up to me and go, you're allowed drink at the tables. I go, we encourage you. And he goes, are you allowed to be drunk in the room? To a degree.
Yeah.
To a degree. Once you're well behaved.
But going back to what you were saying about the secret sauce, it's also that balance though. And what I salute you for is the being able to create that environment where everyone is just having an absolute blast. But the main event itself, the Irish Open title, is still meaningful. It's still prestigious. So what you haven't done is got to a point where no one gives a shit anymore. This is still a tournament people want to win.
Oh, yeah. No, they do want to win it. I know that. And I know, like, Chris Dowling and lads like this. And, like, look at some of the people who are winning. David Doherty wins last year. He's not a lucky winner. You know, he had a great year last year. He's a good poker player.
Yeah.
And like some of the players, like there's players coming here and they're playing in a 1,000 euro event that would never play usually a 1,000 euro event, but they're just playing it because it is nice to win the trophy. Like I know guys who go to the World Series and they go, yeah, I'd like to go to the World Series and I'd like to win the World Series of poker, but I'd like to win the money. I'd like to win that trophy though. I'd like to win that, especially the Irish. The Irish really want to win that trophy.
Yeah,
they really do. Like there's a history wall outside that we had made. It's on the LED thing. Like, you look at some of the names, like some good players have won this tournament.
I mean, absolutely. Griffin comes to mind, Griffin, obviously. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, and Steve O'Dwyer.
Steve O'Dwyer, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. One of the best in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's some great names on that wall. But again, when you've got 40 years of history, when you've got that legacy, when you've got that heritage, it means a lot. And obviously it means a lot to the Irish poker community and the fact that you've now got people traveling literally around the world, as you just highlighted, Paul, to come to this event. It's incredible.
76 countries last year.
So that leads me to my final question. I highlighted this is day 1A of the main event. We've still got 1B, 1C, and 1D to go.
Hard.
So what is your prediction for the field size in this tournament in 2024?
I think we'll do, when you take into consideration what Stars have done for satellite-wise, for example, what Paddy's have done satellite-wise, so we've got like nearly 850, 900 pre-qualified.
Wow.
So that's kind of...
Wow.
So that's a good start.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do another 250 live here. We'll probably do 50 tonight. We're in this. I actually haven't done a line with JP, which is very. It's the first year we actually haven't had a couple of bet lines going on here. I'm in around about the 2700, 2750, and I'll tell you why I don't know whether it'll get up to the 3000. That mini Irish Open, people are barreling into that half a million job for €200.
Yes.
Because that's a.
And that runs alongside, right?
Yeah.
So you've got, it's one or t'other.
Yeah. So they will play that now. The odds on you getting to the two, you know where you are, so you pick what day you're going to choose.
Yeah.
It'll be difficult to get through the, because that needs just shy of 3,000 for that guarantee. I think that'll do 4,000. So somebody for €200 is going to pick up 100, for €200 is going to pick over 100 grand. Nice. It's
insane.
Insane. Like, it's absolutely insane that somebody's going to win that money for a €200 buy-in. I'm in around about the 2750, 365, like a 400,000 first prize would be nice.
It's all gravy, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds
it's
like
all gravy.
Literally cannot miss. I had one question before we let Paul go. This might be putting you on the spot a little bit, and I'm sure you have a lot to choose from. What's the fucking wackiest thing that's ever happened at the Irish Open? What's the craziest story? Because I know last year, and maybe you can't talk about it, but I know last year, like, I'll just say it, that a dude, like, woke up in a ditch and didn't remember who he was, and you guys had to, like, get his...
Oh, that was wacky. Last year.
Yeah.
The guy who went missing.
Yes.
Jesus, lads, that was fucking mad. Like, seriously, I shit you not.
That's probably a top five story.
I had to ring the police and ask the police, am I kidnapping this man if I lock him in a bedroom? Okay. The guard is going, it depends on kind of where you are here, Paul. I need a bit more content.
It's the Irish Open. Oh, the Irish Open. Oh, yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. The guy went missing. He had some mental issues. He hadn't taken his medication.
Right.
His mother rings from Canada. We say, we'll find him. We find him. We lose him. Okay. We find him again. We bring him to the airport. We put him in the hotel. We book him a flight. You're gone. He doesn't go.
Oh, no.
He doesn't make the plane. His mother rings again. He's gone again. He's back in Dublin. We find him in another hotel, roaming the streets of Dublin. He goes, not a good idea roaming the streets of any city after midnight. We find him again. Don't let him out of sight. JP has him now. Now I'm bringing him to the hotel. We booked the flight. The only goddamn seat. First class.
Now he's going to get on the plane.
He's like, okay, maybe now.
7,000 clams, right? Now I'm already down 2,000 from the flight he didn't fucking get on. The €300 from the hotel night he was in. Now we bring. So I better ring the police. Am I kidnapping this guy? I have a guy in the car. Am I kidnapping him if we put him in a bedroom and we lock the bedroom? And he goes, no. JP says, right, I'll bring him up to my poker club. We play some poker. Says to the guys in the place, don't let this fella out of your sight. Gone.
Again.
Gone again.
Oh, my God.
JP's out. The staff are out. They're going out. They're fucking running all around with JP's club. They find him again. JP goes into the airport and he literally walks him to the gate and he says to the security, do not let him out of your sight. Please. He got home now and he got looked after when he went home, but that was 3-4 days now of this guy.
Just to be clear, you're running a poker tournament.
Not really his responsibility.
I was going to say, and it seems that this took a lot of your time and money to rectify the situation.
And by the way, the event was over too at this point, right? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, over.
Wow.
Yeah, it was because we found his wallet. We were trying
to
track him because we found his money and his cards and everything. So now we're trying to find who owns all the money. That was mad.
Well, it's got a happy ending. I'm sorry it cost you so much money, but you seem like a mensch before. And if this doesn't sell people on the Irish Open, come, because it's good people running the event too.
And I was also going to say, I hope you run better this year, Paul, and don't have to deal with any situations like that. Thank you very much for joining us.
Dead on. Dead on. Nice. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've heard from the man behind the Irish Open. Let's hear from a couple of guys who are going to be playing the Irish Open main event and also potentially part of the live stream coverage coming your way on the PokerStars Twitch and YouTube channels. Dara Okani, David Lappin, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, James, and well done on the pronunciation of the second name.
Every time, Dari. You know,
Sorry, can you say it again? So I want to make sure I don't screw it up.
O'Carney.
O'Carney.
Not O'Kearney.
Oh, sure. Fine. I can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a hard one. It's just you'd be amazed how many
The man's
people
dressed like a carnival. You can say O'Carney. It's perfect.
That's the way to think about it. Yeah.
So obviously you guys are players, you're ambassadors, you're broadcasters, you're writers, and of course podcasters. First of all, congratulations on the Global Poker Award.
Thank you very much. We were very surprised but very happy.
Yeah. And it's the new design award, I have to say, is very nice.
Okay. This is like a more elongated sort of pillar.
It looks more like the Nakatomi Plaza building.
Oh,
Die Hard, which
I haven't seen
I'm
this yet. This sounds
intriguing. So you're pissed off, you can tell people to stick it up their ass. Is that is it better for that?
It's a pointier weapon.
But yeah, so this is finally the kind of crossover that everyone's not been waiting for.
Yeah, no, I don't think they have. We've had you on our
That's
show.
That's true.
And we will have Joe on our show at some point,
I'm sure. I've been given the green light. I can go on the chip race. Now, tell me a little bit about the chip race, actually. What's the difference between the chip race and the lock-in?
Okay. Darren, do you want to field that one?
Yeah. Well, basically, the chip race was the original podcast, and that was just a podcast. And that went away for a while, and then when we were sponsored by Unibet, we brought it back as something we could give them extra. And we did that for a few years, and then the pandemic happened, and we were like, well, we won't be going to live events anymore, so we should do something else. So we started it as a YouTube-only show, and that's hence the name The Lock-In, because we were all in lockdown at the time. And that's the idea of that originally was it was just going to be me and David's weekly Zoom call, but on the second show that ratings tanked. So we were like, well, we're going to have to get guests in. So from the first two shows were us solo. Now it's just a guest. And it's just more relaxed, informal chat about whatever's happening.
Now, so it's a spin-off, basically.
It's a spin-off, yeah.
It didn't know what it was supposed to be at the beginning. So there's a very clear sort of four-episode arc where we're fumbling around trying to figure out what this show is, and then we kind of settled on topical news chat.
I could give people advice who are starting podcasts, which, by the way, we don't need anymore, anybody. If you're thinking of starting a podcast, we don't need another podcast, in poker or otherwise. But people always want to have like their thing figured out ahead of time, and I'm like, it's okay. It's okay to just do your show and just figure out what it's going to be as you go, because it's not going to be that good at the beginning anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the same goes for the chip race, actually. We were very green and didn't really know broadcasting at all, but we actually had probably our best ever setup. We had a sound studio who were making podcasts for rugby and cricket,
right.
And they asked us to make it. So they'd actually sort of got us in going, we think a poker one would work. And yeah, I think we probably were okay at it at the start, but we weren't great. And if we listen back now, we would cringe. But we had great equipment, and we had a great sound studio, and you know, a guy who was like better than us at all the sound editing and whatever. And then we went away, and then it's sort of been me really who's kind of done the back end stuff. So then there's a very clear curve of when I wasn't very good at that until I got decent.
And here you are doing live streams and doing spin-offs of your podcast.
Yes, exactly.
It's all happening. So we just spoke to Paul O'Reilly and obviously got like his personal history of the Irish Open. Dara, starting with you, when did you first play this event? And again, I know it's such a cliche to ask someone, what does the Irish Open mean to you? But clearly, especially to the Irish poker community, this is a very special event.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. I started playing poker very late in life, 2007. I played my first Irish Open the following year, 2008. It was out in City West at the time. I think the buy-in was about 4K.
Yeah.
And it was the 3 million guarantee. So it was a huge tournament. It was like peak Celtic Tiger. Country was booming. Everybody was playing. I was the second person eliminated the first year I played it. It was a freeze-out back then as well. So, I personally, it's been a fairly sad story of like lots of early bust-outs, gradually moving into sort of doing the commentary because I was the first person to bust out. And so
who's available? O'Carney.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. There he is walking away again. Look at him. So yeah, the first few years I did a lot of commentary, and I have a lot of happy memories of doing commentary. You know, the year Surinder Sunar won, and other years as well. And then I think the Irish Open sort of dipped around the middle of the last decade. The numbers were dropping.
Yeah.
The sponsors weren't as enthusiastic. And then JP and Paul came in and they really revitalized it. When I started playing poker, there was always a debate among Irish players, like, which would you rather win, an EPT or an Irish Open, and almost every Irish player would say the Irish Open because it has such a special place in Irish history. People can name almost all the Irish Open winners. For Irish people, it's very, very special. And yeah, so that's I think what the Irish Open means to me. It's a tournament that I've never done very well in. I think I might have main cashed it once. But it still means a lot to me. It really feels like Christmas. This is Christmas week, basically, yeah. In Irish poker.
It's a weird one. And by the way, when you talk about would you rather win an Irish Open or an EPC, Steve O'Dwyer went, I'll have both, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'll have everything. We were saying to Paul, David, that they've somehow kept that significance, legacy, importance, a title that people want to win, a trophy that people want to have, while also creating this insane carnival atmosphere where no one's taking anything too seriously. Because it is actually quite a hard thing to marry.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think when it was a 3 and a 4K, well, the country was sort of rich at the time. That's maybe your biggest buy-in of the year. Certainly probably was the biggest buy-in for half the field or more. So I think it was a gamble by the guys actually to go less rebranded as an 1100. Bit risky maybe in a way, because obviously with a lower buy-in, you risk the prestige going down. Yeah. But they had the vision that it would become what I suppose it is today sitting here in the RGS, which is that it would just become a huge field. It would become sort of a people's tournament that everyone could kind of qualify for. You know, even pub players play 100 quid games. They could satellite in. And yeah, just by sheer volume now, they've restored the prestige, I think.
Yeah, also you call it an 1100, but for a lot of people it's not. It's actually an 8K, so.
Right, yeah. That's true. That's very true.
Yes, the re-entry thing you reference has changed in the years since 2008.
Actually, David, I wanted to know your length of time that you've been playing the Irish Open.
So I started playing around the same time as Dara, maybe a few months earlier. We didn't know each other for the first few years. I was living in America, so I was playing in Foxwoods, the Mohican Sun. I remember the NAPT going there, and then obviously it went away almost immediately, but that was a great event. And I was basically an online guy who dabbled with a little bit of live.
Okay.
But when I moved back to Ireland in 2011, I befriended Dara very early on. And, he showed me the ropes. He got me playing a bit more live. He also warned me who not to upset at the table, which was very kind of him. Because routinely I would go to him at a break and go, oh, this idiot in seat 5. And he'd go, oh, no, you don't know Dave. You don't want to upset him. No, that's a very dangerous person. You need to be careful.
You sent me a DM one time about a very dangerous person. And I'll just leave it at that. Like,
yeah, we try and warn each other because, well, particularly the mouthy ones like you and me, Joe, we could get ourselves.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that because you never know what I'm going to say. So the reason I wanted to get that history is because, and follow me here because my metaphors are really thin at best. When I was a kid, I had a best friend. And I used to go to his birthday party every year. And when I first started going to his birthday party, it was just me and him. And then there was a couple more friends. And then he got really popular. And then he used to have like 20 kids at his birthday party. And I would be real pissed off. I would be like, well, I'm his friend. I've been here from the beginning. And I was really jealous over how big that birthday party got. And I felt kind of shitty that I was no longer such an important member of the birthday party. When you guys see this becoming the size of the thing that it is now, do you feel that jealousy at all, or are you just happy that it's as big as it is?
No, I'm thrilled because, like, don't get me wrong, when I started, it was a big deal, like 3 million guarantee on the first one, so it got like 700 runners. So, okay, not quite on this scale, but it was a big thing, and then it gradually declined,
right.
and that was really sad.
Okay.
It just seemed to fall behind. It was just another, you know, regional thing in Europe, whereas in my mind, it's always been one of the great European events, and then to see it come back. You know, I think it was a very clever decision to go back down to 1K. That allows a lot more people to come in and at least fire one bullet. And then the re-entry thing allows other people who want to, you know, gamble it up and try and get a stack through. So it's kind of the perfect point. And it's just getting bigger and bigger every year now. And I feel like the prestige is back as well.
Yeah.
This is something that people feel is an important event again.
And a ridiculous number of qualifiers coming through the door. What was the number that Paul said? 900 across all the different platforms?
Yeah,
that is wild. I just really glad that that's how your analogy ended, because I thought this was going to be, you know, the way you were friends with Dara and now he's really popular with everybody and you're
I'm not
still
gonna lie.
There just going,
I thought that's where I was going to.
Same question, about Dara now,
Obviously, I think it's fair to say that when you guys aren't happy about something, when you don't like something, everyone knows about it.
Really?
You don't mince your words.
You'd be surprised how many of our words get minced.
How many times have you compared yourself to a World War I soldier when writing blogs?
That is quite a normal euphemism where I come from, but I remember you pointing out that above the parapet seemed a little pretentious.
All I will say is, when you are happy, when you are positive about something, we know you really mean it. So I'm interested, and be honest, how are you feeling about this year's Irish Open, about this year's event?
I really enjoyed last year. I thought just the scale. This is a great building, actually.
Yeah.
I did miss City West. I thought City West had become the home of the Irish Open, and I thought it had been a wonderful, whatever, 5 or 6 years we had there. The Norwegians sort of added their bit of flavour to it as well. We usually piggyback the Norwegian Championships onto the Irish Open for a big two-week festival, and it was very special out there. So I came in kind of going, like, I hope this will work, because it's a bit of a strange venue to think of poker being in here. But my God, you just have to look at the room. It's dressed so beautifully.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of grandeur and scale. It's in a fabulous part of Dublin, so you can access Dublin more easily than we could at City West. And, like, yeah, you mentioned the qualifiers there. Like, there's no way it's not going to get 3,000. It might get 3,500. It might even get more.
Well, interestingly,
it's going to be
Paul,
wild numbers.
Paul's hedging slightly because he's concerned.
I think he's being conservative because
yes.
he has to be.
Yes,
yeah.
But also he has pointed out, cannibalization is probably the wrong word, but you've got the mini running alongside it.
That's
and
true.
That might just take a few hundred players away from that. But
that makes sense, but that's also a nice thing, because if there are players out there who... a 200 is a big one, and they want to come down to Dublin for the week and play that, then they might have always felt that pressure of, oh no, I have to go for the 1K. And you don't like people playing outside their bankroll or taking shots too big. So if that's in their wheelhouse, it's perfect that that's there as well.
Yeah. How are you feeling about the atmosphere this year, Dara?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there that we're not shy about when we have criticism. It's always intended as constructive criticism. And, you know, I have an immense respect for JP and Paul. What they've done bringing the Irish Open back from the brink is absolutely amazing. But I did have some specific criticisms of last year, the cancellation of side events and some other things. This year, I think, is a 100% improvement.
Good.
The atmosphere is much better. The side events are all running. People are happy. People can play whatever they want to get into. I think this has been amazing. And, you know, one of the things one of the reasons I respect them so much is I they're always the kind of guys who will listen to constructive criticism. And I think they've taken it on board this year. And this is an amazing event. This is the best event I've been at this year.
I think also, you know, that... there are going to be growing pains for a new venue, for a new association, right? Like, I think that we didn't exactly get the tone right for what this event was last year. I'm looking forward to that. I think that, you know, there's just, it was new for everybody.
It was new,
there's
absolutely,
like a lot of new stuff going on.
Yeah, and they had capacity issues. They have more tables this year, so that's helping. In many ways, it's a victim of its own success because it's just grown so fast.
Yeah.
And that's always going to be a problem. I think also because they hadn't anticipated the numbers in the main event last year, some of the days ran really, really long, and that annoyed some of the recreationals who had to play 15, 16-hour days. Again, they've addressed that this year. So, hats off to the guys. They've done a great job. You know, we're still early on in the festival, but so far it's been absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that Stars do as well. I was so impressed. I spoke to Cedric, I know, colleague of all of you guys in Paris, and I congratulate him on what a great EPT Paris that was. Perfect venue. It was transformative from the previous year.
100%.
I hope I'm allowed to swear on the show, because he went, well, you know, last year was a shit show and we don't want that to happen again. And I think that's what Stars are great at, is that they react. If something doesn't go wrong, they don't go, okay, who do we fire? Who do we blame? Who, you know, let's, you know, say it wasn't really our fault. They'll actually go, okay, we messed that up. And the next year it comes back exactly as it should have. And I think that's, you know, huge hats off for that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, the last Stars event I was at was Paris, and Paris, I wasn't there last year, but I heard it was a shit show as you just described it. And this year it was amazing as well.
It was amazing.
And it felt like that, you know, Stars had taken on board all the criticism. They obviously have a great live events team, but part of being a great organization is being able to take criticism and basically admit when something has not been great and try to make it better.
Of course.
I feel like there was still a shit show in Paris, like around the bubble. There might have been a bit of a shit show that happened.
In the FPS event.
Yeah.
The FPS High Roller, I think, specifically. There was a bit of shit show on the bubble when a player had the clock called on them and
got into
a slight dispute.
I'm sure you've talked about it ad nauseum on your podcast, but...
No, it never came up. I did write that article, though. I've been very coyly trying to make friends with all the Stars pros. I think Tonka's turned them all against me.
Actually, that was our burning question was, look, we thought it was a pretty sweet burn that you had on Tonka, but we want to know, how did he react to it, and are you guys cool?
No, well, I hope I was one of the first to congratulate him when he got, I know he didn't win and I know he has to get that monkey off his back still, but amazing results, and I was rooting for him the whole way. I've known Parker for a long time. In fact, we took one of his horses off him years ago when he was sort of emptying out his stable, and we were building a stable of players to coach and stake. We did a little bit of business with him back then, so we've known him a long, long time. I think he's probably been on the show 4 or 5 times.
Oh, wow, okay.
In one form or another. Like I would consider us friends, and I hope we still are. As you say, like a sweet burn like that, you just can't pass it up.
So when you fire off a line, which I might as well just say it, not dance around, when you fire off a line like pipe down. Crystal Meth Santa.
Yeah.
Is that just pure instinct rage that comes out? Or is it like, I'm gonna think about this?
I came up with that line in 2019. I've been waiting 5 years.
Because I'm not good at those situations. Like, in an altercation, I'm actually quite quiet. I actually am not really very chirpy when it comes to, like, get into something with someone in person. Whereas you seem pretty good at it.
I genuinely was really annoyed.
Sorry. Wow, what a voice crack there. Not a criticism, by the way. I'm like, I want to be more like that. So is it just instinct?
Well, I cannot back up my words with actions.
Of course not, yeah. No one should, we wouldn't be laughing at that.
So I usually find myself with some very, like, well-built friends around me who've saved me many times when my mouth has got me into trouble. But my mouth does fire off. I played cricket for a lot of years. I would have done a lot of sledging. I was probably, like, one of those kind of people as well, for your non-specifically English or Indian audience. That sort of shit-talking. In-game shit-talking. And, I probably was kind of good at, if he could be good at something like that, I probably was quite good at. But genuinely, I was so annoyed in that moment, because I do think Tom was out of order. No need to go back and legislate the whole thing, but I thought it was just really wrong what he did. And then Tonka, just trying to be funny, I'm sure, just like piped up from the other table, and I was like, I'm not having not now.
One question I'll ask you, Dara, before we just quickly talk about the live coverage we've got coming up of the Irish Open. I noticed that the qualifiers get a free copy of one of your books. This is what, book number 28 now? And what? Where are we in the series?
That's this right here. How many books have you written?
this was actually the first book we ever wrote. So it's
right.
It's the original. We're up to 7 now at the moment. But yeah, this is the original and still the one that has had the biggest impact. The best part for me writing the book has been so many messages we get from people saying that they qualified for an event like this, which was a bucket list item for them, because they read the book. I woke up to a message like that this morning, and it still happens. That's the best thing.
So Satellite Strategy
was the first book, and that's what's in the bag. I think Willie Elliott and Dave Curtis, though, they're out to get me now, because they're telling all the people that I will sign all 400 copies of the book. So I think that's my week gone.
Well, he says, like, it'll be his week on. I know how this goes down. I've signed so many Darragh O'Carneys on books to give to people over the years. There are so many of them out there that are
that you're faking, or that...
Yeah, Darragh's like, oh, there's someone in Malta who wants a signed copy. Can you just sign it and give it to me?
You're letting out the secrets now.
So it's not a case that people
you're
get the two of you...
You're not nearly famous enough for that, okay?
See, I thought you were saying is that people get the two of you confused. Because
that has happened too. Yeah. That has happened.
Because there
as
is
well.
One guy out there who every time he sees me goes, hello, my babies, and I have to go to... I'm not him. I'm the other one.
Yeah. I don't know if Dave remembers, but the book actually came out just before the Irish Open that year. So it was the first time that I was meeting people who had bought the book and wanted it signed. But a lot of people get us confused. So they were coming up to Dave and saying, oh, the book's going really well for you, isn't it? So he was really pissed off at the start, saying, no, I'm the other guy. I'm not the guy who wrote the book. But by the end, he was just like, yeah, the book's going really well. Thank you for your
I mean, at least with you guys, they go, the Irish one. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little easier to confuse. We have a lot more differences between us that people really shouldn't be talking about.
We sound so... Like, Dara kind of leans in and speaks in a more deeper dulcet tone and says clever things, and I screech away on the other side. So I think it's really obvious who's who.
So I'm the you, you're the me.
I think so.
Yeah, okay. I think so. Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of a bizarro sort of.
Except I do more of the anchoring from that voice. If that makes sense.
Okay, got it.
Maybe there's a switcheroo
there too.
So
you do different
roles
there. Okay.
Freaky Fridaying it, just to come back to that theme. So obviously, we hope both you guys make deep runs in the Irish Open. Dara, this is your year. I've got a feeling. This is the one. This is the one. But if it doesn't work out, obviously, we'd love to have you backstage on the stream. And just to highlight to everyone listening to the show, Easter Friday, Good Friday, is when it all kicks off. So it's four consecutive days of main event coverage. We're going to cover Flight 1C and then cover days 2, 3, and then the final table. So it's very easy to remember because we're live the same time every day. It's 12:30 local time. But confusingly, the bloody clocks change this weekend.
Oh.
So Friday and Saturday, it's 12:30 GMT. But then Sunday and Monday, it's 12:30 British summertime. So we lose an hour going Saturday into Sunday. Now, I mean, that's fine for everyone in Europe because they're all in the same boat. But if you're over the other side of the Atlantic, if you're in North America, remember the time difference goes back to 5 hours, 8 hours, rather than 4 hours, 7 hours.
I can't believe we're starting a Good Friday. Will you guys participate? We're doing a thing this year, the Stations of the Crossbook.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll tell you more about it later.
I
don't have any more details for that joke. It's really just a title at the moment.
Yeah. I like it, yeah. It sounds vaguely sacrilegious.
And I have to say, I'm very much looking forward to coming in and doing some commentary because, you know, over the years, back in 2015, I got to helm the show for the entire festival. And I think pretty much every year I've been here, I've popped in. Dara's, I think, maybe helmed it 2 or 3 times throughout and then obviously comes in as a guest as well. So we really do feel a little bit part of this particular tournament. It's a special one for us that way as well.
I'm looking forward to it also because I do think that last year, you know, that we missed out on a lot of color because we don't know these players.
Yeah, of course.
So, and to have you guys in there and be like, hey, this person does that and they do that for a living, da da da, like that kind of stuff. I as a color person, I'm way more interested in the stories of the people that are happening than how well somebody played A7 offsuit.
Yeah.
So looking forward to have you guys contribute to that as well.
Absolutely. So 4 days of live coverage, Easter weekend, 12:30 local time every single day, following it from 1C all the way through to the final table, playing to a winner on Monday. And at this point, I'm going to hand things over to Joe, because if you guys thought you were coming on the show and not playing a stupid game, you got another thing coming.
Oh, no.
Couldn't leave you guys out of this stupid game. I don't know if y'all... I know you do occasionally listen to the podcast. On the 300th episode, we did a little game called England versus Ireland. That's the whole theme of this thing.
Congratulations, by the way. Great milestone. And I heard it was a wonderful show. Haven't tuned in yet, but I know you had Vicky on. Well done, guys. That's amazing to get that.
And also well done on your GPI awards. That was last year or the year before?
Last year. So England versus Ireland. All I'm going to do is I'm going to read you two things. One of them's going to be from England. One of them's going to be from Ireland. I'm going to ask you a question about them. And all you have to do is say whether or not the question refers to the person from England, the thing from England, or the thing from Ireland.
Do you have, what do you do as an example, maybe?
Example, here we go. Well, okay. I mean, we'll just play the game. It's fine.
We'll play the game.
We'll just alternate back and forth between you guys, and we'll see who can get the least number wrong. All right, so the first one is Liam Neeson versus Jason Statham.
Ireland versus England.
Ireland versus England. Sorry,
It's not going to be one of the racist things that Liam Neeson has said, is it?
It is not going to be that, actually. No.
Phew.
Although.
Now that you brought it up.
Ireland or England, which one killed 31 people in his breakout action role? We'll start over here with Dara.
I'm going to say Liam Neeson.
Ireland is correct. Same category. Three questions per category.
I would have got that one wrong. I'm really glad that was his question.
At the time of writing this question, which one was ranked higher on the IMDb Pro Star Meter, England or Ireland?
Can I ask what the IMDb Pro Star Meter is?
Which one is considered to be a bigger star?
Right now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
England or Ireland?
Like actors?
Of Neeson or Statham?
Oh, same actors.
Same category, yep.
Get there. Oh, no. Well, Statham made like one of the most amounts of money. I know he was like the 8th best paid actor. It's going to be Statham this year, I think.
Statham is correct.
Yeah.
25 to 38 was where they're ranked right now on the IMDb.
This is good for us. I would have got that one wrong.
What a team. Dara, last one about Neeson and Statham. Before acting, he sold fake perfume and watches on the street. England or Ireland?
That could be either of them. I'm going to say England.
England is correct. You guys are 3 for 3. Here we go. Next one. Next category.
I actually a little bit know Liam Neeson, so I did know his background. My mum acted in plays with him when he was quite young. So I was like, unless he was Robin as a 15-year-old, it's got to be Statham. Well done,
Dara. Fantastic. We're going to get more freaking Liam Neeson stories out of you. All right, here we go. Next one. Next category is Barney Boatman versus Andy Black. So England versus Ireland.
Legends.
Higher on the all-time money list, England or Ireland? We'll start over here with David.
Andy has 5 million and change. I don't think Barney has that much. Barney probably has like Oh, that big win though recently. I think the big win only got him up to like four. I'm going to go with Andy Black.
England. It's England. Barney's got him by a nose.
No!
It's really close. It's really close. Which one has more WSOP caches? England or Ireland?
Let's see. England?
England is correct. Barney's got more WSOP caches. Which one beat actor Michael Greco heads up in a PLO event here at the Irish Poker Open? Well, back when it was called the Irish Poker Open.
I think that's going to be Barney. He plays more PLO. I think I'll go... I even looked at his Hendon mob and I was making fun of how badly he did at the Irish Open when he was on the show a couple of weeks ago. I'm still going to go with Barney.
We're looking for Ireland on that one. Ireland, Andy Black. Yeah.
I've blown it, Dara. I
would have got that. Yeah.
Well, all I'm going to say is right now, Dara leads you by 2 points.
Oh, we're playing against each other. It wasn't a team sport after all.
Yeah. The main reason I got the last one right is I flew to Vegas last year with Andy, and he spent most of the flight complaining about how badly he'd run at the WSOP down the years.
Nice. Yeah. Andy Black traditionally running terribly at the, the third biggest main event of all time? All right, here we go. England versus Ireland. Emily Bronte and James Joyce. Which one wrote more novels, England or Ireland?
More novels. England.
Emily Bronte wrote a novel. That's one. Right. One novel.
Wow. Wuthering Heights is her only book.
Ireland is that one. Back over here. Which one lived a longer life? England or Ireland?
Okay, Joyce got to about like 70. Oh, I don't know my Emily Brontes. I think Joyce lived longer.
Ireland is correct. Bronte only lived till she was 30, I think. Last one here for this category. Which one has a connection to a famous contemporary poker-playing lady?
Ah, we know this.
You may know, but it's not your question.
Famous poker-playing lady. Joyce, Molly Bloom.
Molly Bloom is correct. Ireland is correct. Two more categories. Here we go.
By this my calculations, by the way, Dara is still ahead by 1 point.
Okay. England versus Ireland. English bulldog versus an Irish setter. On average.
Oh, God, where's Barry?
Yeah, exactly.
On average, which one's heavier, David? England or Ireland?
Bulldogs are kind of pudgy, but they're smaller. I think they're kind of smaller. They're going to go red setter.
Ireland is correct.
Phew.
Owned by two U.S. presidents. England or Ireland?
England.
Irish setter owned by two U.S. presidents. Wow. We're looking for Ireland there.
Who were the two U.S. presidents?
Nixon and...
another one.
Truman,
another
maybe? One. I don't know. Definitely Nixon was one. Finally, which is banned in the country of Norway, England or Ireland?
Wow. Can't imagine the Norway... Like, after rape and pillaging us, they can't really be not having our dogs. I'm going to say the Bulldogs.
It has to be the Bulldogs. They're inbred, right?
Correct. England, they consider cruel at this point to keep creating Bulldogs. Final category. This is from mythology. Grendel from Beowulf versus the Doulahan.
What? What are those words?
Are you familiar with the Doulahan?
I'm thinking of the lady character who spread. No, that's
the Doulahan is apparently the Irish version of the Headless Horseman.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Over here for Dara. Which one has a mouthful of razor sharp teeth? Is it Grendel the troll or Doulahan the Headless Horseman?
Grendel the troll.
No, we're looking for Ireland. Ireland, wow. That one.
So
he carries his head with him.
Oh, okay. He's not headless. He just doesn't have his head on his shoulders.
That's what they call. What the fuck do you want from me? It's their mythology.
I've never heard of this.
I've never heard that either.
Which one is considered to be a shadow walker, England or Ireland?
The Beowulf thing, the England.
Correct. England is correct there. England or Ireland, which one has a weakness to toward gold objects?
England.
Ireland, the Doulahan. What's the score?
Dara held the lead for most of the game, but David, you pinched it in the end. No way. You are the winner.
Oh, well, look.
Congratulations. Everyone's a loser in my game, so don't worry about it.
It was a team sport, and I think we got just over half of them right.
If you've ever heard any of these games before, you perform better than, I'm going to say, 95% of participants.
We slightly outperformed the randomizer.
Actually, really quick, I have to double-check the Barney versus Andy Black pendant mobs, because they were so close that I don't want to screw you guys, so hold on. This is great radio. Barney Bowman is 5.4.
He's ahead.
And he has like 5.1 or 5.1 2.
Okay, yep. It is 5.1 for Andy.
EPT Paris put Barney over the edge. Guys, it's been a pleasure, and look forward to spending more time in your company in the coming days.
That would be great fun.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, my babies. That's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. Coming up next time, the real Irish Open recap. This was a little us-centric as far as the poker we have been playing.
This was a hybrid. This was a recap of our playing experience at the Irish Open and a preview of the main event coverage that we're now going to focus on streaming. The next few days for us are very much going to be immersed in the live world. So obviously, by the time we regroup, by the time we do our next podcast from London, we will know who won that main event, and hopefully we can speak to the new champion of the Irish Open main event.
We'll be speaking to a few more real poker players, or at least a real poker player next time. No offense, David, Dara, Felix, but probably someone who made a little bit of noise here at the Irish Open.
So I have a key question, Joe. This is the first time we've done anything like this, where we've actually produced a podcast on location, mid-event, as it were, in the room, overlooking the poker room. I'm interested in what people think about it. I'm not saying that we can do this from every single live event that we go to. I think we're too busy at most EPT stops. But if you like this format, if you like this on-location approach, a little bit of a different approach to Poker in the Ears, let us know. That's why we have the podcast discussion channel on the PokerStars Discord server.
I got to tell you, it brought back memories for me, because this is how I used to do it back in the day. This is how I got my start doing poker podcasts, and it was either done in the hallway or in the room.
I remember being interviewed by you in the hallway of the PCA back in 2011.
Yeah, and before that, I think my first ever trip to London was in the room at the Grosvenor Casino for World Series of Poker Europe back in 2009. So I got weird little, I don't know, chills and throwbacks doing this, so I might be down for it more often as well.
Okay, well, as I said, we welcome your feedback, we welcome your questions, we welcome your comments, and also we welcome your Superfan applications. We didn't have Superfan versus Stapes this week. Normal service will resume next week, but we need to get people lined up for future episodes. So use the Superfan applications channel on the PokerStars Discord server. Use podcast discussion for everything else. And as ever, we link to the PokerStars Discord server in the podcast description.
All right, my babies, that is all the time we have got for this week's show. Until next time, for James Hardigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.